This is a Fox News election alert. President Barack Obama has just been re-elected.
Re-elected as President of the United States.
Thank you so much.
Enough of him. I want to know, what does the election result mean for freedom?
For freedom?
Freedom?
I have no idea.
That's our show tonight.
And now, John Stossel.
Okay, it's finally over. Now we get four more years of Barack Obama. So, what does that mean for the most important issue to me? Freedom. In Chicago, where the president's most loving supporters celebrated with him, Stossel Show special correspondent Kennedy asked people there, what does Obama's election mean for freedom?
What does Obama's win do for freedom?
Freedom?
For freedom? Yeah, I have no idea. Sorry.
For freedom. For freedom?
What does that mean for freedom?
It's that.
Yeah, let's dance. Most people there had no clue what to do with the question. It's just not on their radar. That's upsetting to me. So let's take that question to the man who's taught me a lot about the importance of freedom, David Bowes of the Cato Institute. So, were you surprised by that?
I must say I'm dumbfounded by that. I didn't expect that if you ask people at the Obama celebration that question, they would give the answers I would like, but I would have thought they would have had an answer.
It's as if their attitude was, what stuff can government give me? And freedom to do your own thing isn't part of that.
Well, that's right, and I don't really understand that. I mean, there used to be a left. There was a counterculture left. There is certainly, as we'll probably talk about today, a movement in favor of marijuana freedom, for instance, that is about doing your own thing, even if those people don't understand that starting a business is also about doing your own thing. So it's very disappointing to me that they don't even think of the connection between a Democratic election and its impact on freedom.
So let's bring Kennedy into the conversation. Kennedy, thank you for going to Chicago.
Thank you, John.
I'm glad that
David.
You go so I don't have to.
Yes.
And what was it like? These people are so happy that this big government guy has won again.
Oh, they were thrilled. And it was really interesting with the freedom question. People used it very subjectively when they could actually come up with an answer. I didn't think it was going to be that much of a stumper, but I would say about 57% of the people were dumbfounded.
All right, let's get to some of the specifics. In Chicago last night, you asked supporters what his election will mean for America. Here are some of the answers.
Climate change addressed in the near-term future, immigration.
He would definitely help students like me be able to go to school and be able to receive a quality education.
I am for Obama because of Pell Grants.
Now we can move forward, but he had to save this country first.
So Heath, you're laughing there. They feel he saved the country. I feel we're going to go broke sooner because he's in power, but I'll let you respond.
Well, we're going to go broke sooner because we've run up $5 trillion in debt under his administration. Now, you know, we ran up $10 trillion over the last few administrations, so it's not unprecedented, but it is a higher rate of increasing the national debt than we've had before. And as far as saving the country, if you believe that all those bailouts and all that stimulus money and all of that stopped a depression, then I guess you would believe he saved the country. I don't think that. I think they put incredible new burdens on business enterprise. I heard somebody today on NPR saying, businesses have been holding back on investment because of uncertainty. Now with the election, there's certainty, so maybe they'll start investing. Well, I think that's whistling past the graveyard. When the certainty is higher taxes and more aggressive regulators, I don't think that's going to be a very good recipe for investment.
And more debt. When you talk about the $5 trillion in new debt, we have this chart comparing Greece and the track it's been put on, and we have riots in Greece this week. And the United States is about 12 years behind, but the same trajectory.
Yeah, but now we're on a fast track. And I think, you know, as far as debt, and some of the younger people that I spoke with last night, they were jubilant, they were excited, but it's also incredibly irresponsible to the point of being dangerous. And I don't think they realize that they're taking on that debt to bankrupt their own future and the futures of their children. And it was very short-sighted, this celebration, because people think free stuff is great when essentially, it's not free at all. It's very, very costly.
And in the clip that we just played, they talked about free stuff. I get to go to school free. But also immigration. And yet Obama's deported more people than Bush did. And then climate change.
Climate change was never addressed in any of the three debates. And that's the one thing that I ask people over and over again. The president never talked about climate change on that stage when he could have, if that were a paramount issue to him. And clearly it's not. So I don't see why people think the next 4 years are going to be different or why that matters.
Immigration might be an opportunity for some progress in the next 4 years, because hopefully the Republicans have gotten the message that what they've been doing with regard to social issues and immigration has not been working for them. So maybe they're ready to talk, and maybe he'll be ready to talk if they are.
And as President Obama has been the candidate of big government and capitalism, as I call corporate supported, government supported.
That should be the name of your next book.
Capitalism. At least a few people were very clear about how they were happy that he was going to give them stuff.
Well, my company will get more work.
Mike?
Yeah.
Look, when you have a $3.6 trillion federal government, that money goes somewhere, and it will absolutely benefit some businesses. That's the whole point of government intervention, of crony capitalism. It is taking money from all of us and then giving to some people. And so if you are one of the companies that will benefit, maybe one of the clean energy or green jobs companies that has not already gone bankrupt, then you might get that money. And similarly, if you're a defense contractor, you'd be in favor of Mitt Romney getting elected, because that would be good for your business. But it's all bad for the American economy in general to tax some people and then dole the money out. Romney had a good line during one of the debates when he said, you're not just picking winners and losers, you're just picking losers.
So they can pick some winners, probably just by random selection. You've written about people viewing politicians as the magic politician who will just solve every problem, and Obama was the magic president. I got the sense last night, these people waited for 3 hours before he showed up, and they were waiting forever. He's magic to them.
Yeah, no, they really feel that he has this intrinsic quality that is going to, now that he's been reelected, change people's lives. And, you know, essentially they were saying, he's just warmed up the last 4 years. It's like, for what? It's terrifying.
And there were some fewer people who felt this way about Romney, but this, you say, is really dangerous.
Well, that's right. I think Obama is a classic example of this cult of the presidency, but the idea that the president or any politician can just fix all the problems in society, that there's some kind of magic there, doesn't start with Obama. It goes a long way back, and it is this attitude that we should get rid of racism. The president should do that. He should stop the rise of the oceans. He should get everybody a house. You know, I saw an interview once with teenagers where they said, actually, it may have been preteens, who said things like, he should get everybody a house. Well, kids, that's understandable. They see people without houses, they say the government should give everybody a house. Adults are supposed to understand that there are costs and trade-offs and incentives, and that if you start trying to do these things, there are a lot of unintended consequences, and the government cannot just magically eradicate racism, poverty, homelessness.
But apparently saying that there are trade-offs does not get you elected either. I'm told now, okay, Obama has a mandate. The Republicans should honor it.
Well, I'll tell you one thing about the mandate I haven't seen anybody point out. He got 9 million fewer votes last night than he did 4 years ago. That seems to undermine the notion of a mandate. He had 4 years, and 9 million fewer people showed up to vote for him.
And that's the word that a lot of people used in Chicago. I mean, they said this was a mandate. You know, this is the country. And they weren't just talking about health care. And it was interesting because when freedom came up, a lot of women said, freedom to me means freedom over my body and freedom to choose.
When they say freedom over my body means freedom to choose, they mean that the government should force my employer to pay for my medical and birth control choices.
Right.
So it's nobody is, in fact, threatening any woman's right to choose these days.
If you spoke to those people last night, they would say that if Mitt Romney were elected, Pell Grants would go away, no one would be insured, no one would be able to afford college, and abortion would immediately be illegal. That's the level of rationality that we were dealing with.
A Dickensian nightmare.
And more people answered your freedom question with not freedom to choose, but Obamacare, I'll get health care now.
Yeah.
Somehow that's freedom.
Somehow it was going to be free health care, but they don't understand that you have fewer choices. You have zero choices under a single payer system, and that universal health care is, and a lot of people said, that is the ultimate goal. That's what we're headed toward.
And besides which, it's not free. You pay for it in a different way.
It seems free.
I asked somebody the other day if the hotel I was going to stay in had free Wi-Fi, and then I realized, well, of course it doesn't have free Wi-Fi. I'm asking, is the cost of the Wi-Fi included in the list price of the hotel room?
Oh, I don't want you in my hotel. One last clip I'd like to play from last night is an Obama supporter who was so happy finally to be at the table.
We need the people to have a seat at the table when the big decisions are going to be made as to who's going to suffer the most.
So the politicians decide who is going to suffer the most. There's a pie, and yeah, they'll take some, and so who suffers?
It's been total opacity. We don't know what's going on at that table of suffering, but now there's going to, with the next 4 years, there will be this great transparency, and the people will have a seat, and they'll get to choose who suffers.
And of course, one of the problems there is this whole concept that there is the people, and they will have a seat. And are they represented by one of the politicians, all the people? But there's another point there, and you know, the fact is that was an African-American man who was making that point. And the Republicans, for the past 70 years, have told African-Americans and women and gay people and immigrants that you don't really have a seat at the table, you don't have all the rights and dignity that the rest of us do, and now they are paying the price. Republicans wonder why they can't break into the black vote, why there's a gender gap. They should look back on 70 years of history of conservatives resisting equal rights for each one of these groups, and that's a lesson they have got to learn, but it's also a lesson that you can't solve in 4 years.
Are you saying the chickens have come home to roost?
Thank you, Kennedy and David Bowes. Coming up, what the election means for unions and marriage and marijuana. The election's finally over. Did your candidate win? Mine didn't. The Libertarian presidential candidate, Governor Gary Johnson, got 1% of the vote. Darn, I really thought he was going to win this time. And he'll join us later. But for now, let's move beyond the presidential election to some of the important ballot initiatives at stake in some states. Legalizing marijuana for recreational use, allowing gay marriage, or in California, raising their own taxes. Yippee! I can't follow all these measures, so let's do what I do when I want to learn whether my freedom's in danger. Turn to Reason Magazine. Or even better, the brains behind it, Reason's editor-in-chief, Matt Welch, and Nick Gillespie, who runs Reason TV. So, did freedom win at all?
A little bit. If you look at opportunities that Americans had yesterday to vote in a libertarian direction, they actually took it. They just weren't given that many opportunities. Specifically, the biggest thing by far is the marijuana legalization in Colorado and Washington, which is a huge deal. It's a shot across the bow on drug prohibition, and this is how prohibition is eventually going to end in this country, like alcohol prohibition ended before that.
I didn't know this till you pointed it out. Alcohol prohibition was repealed by some individual states before
the feds repealed.
Right. Up to a dozen states, I think, by the end of the prohibition period. New York and other places.
New York did it 3 years into prohibition, and so for 10 years, enforcement was entirely up to the feds.
Right, and some of these cities also, you know, in states, lived in pretty open defiance. And when you do that, the federal government actually doesn't have enough guns to enforce this. The majority, vast majority of marijuana arrests are done on the state level. So there aren't enough DEA agents to go into every Colorado pot smoker from now on. So it's going to set up a conflict with the government, and this is how it ends.
Although at the same time, the DEA, one of our reporters called the Drug Enforcement Administration, who was warning people, whoever would listen, that, you know, the federal laws are still in force. But in a similar way, the shift to marriage equality in a number of states, places like Maine, Maryland, and Washington.
All right, but let's stay on marijuana just for a moment.
I'm happy to stay on marijuana for as long as
a state repeals the law doesn't mean that you're out of trouble. And the Obama administration has raided more than 200 dispensaries, many more than Bush did.
Right. Twice as many.
Has been god-awful on this. And it was actually the Clinton administration, another Democratic administration, that started raiding medical marijuana dispensaries that became legal under California law.
Obama has done it even after saying, oh, we're not going to do it.
Exactly.
This.
And this is a major, major issue, because it's not simply about drug legalization, but it's about, do the states have the right to set certain policies that affect their residents, or do they always have to kind of give over to whatever the federal government says? There have been other precedents in medical marijuana. The Supreme Court ruled, no, it's the federal laws that matter, but this is another bite at that apple, and it's going to have ramifications far beyond just the marijuana legalization.
And let's keep in mind that 50% of Americans now, for the first time, are in favor of legalizing marijuana. This is moving very, very fast in the direction towards popular support for repeal. So it has to start.
In Colorado, it passed solidly, 55 to 45.
Right.
And Colorado and Washington passed solidly.
Right.
And Washington sets THC levels for driving under the influence,
which is... That was a very controversial part among the drug legalization or drug reform crowd about that, but it was meant to kind of come up with a way of allaying some people's fear that there's no way to test for how high you are and when you should
not be driving.
So they're
going to take your blood if you're in an accident.
Yeah. Well, all of this is... I believe Washington State has about a year to figure out the technical implications of the law implementation, and Colorado has about 6 months.
And Colorado's governor, a Democrat, opposed this. He said, well, the voters have spoken, and we have to respect their will. I thought the Democrats were for individual freedom. He went on to say, federal law still says marijuana is an illegal drug, so don't break out the Cheetos or Goldfish too quickly.
God, they love their stupid pot jokes, don't they? This is a great reminder that you are not going to get any help from politicians on this issue and on a lot of issues in which both parties are terrible. The way to get anything done is to root around politics as usual, use the initiative process when you can, and other kind of technicalities of independence to get stuff done. Democrats have been just as useless as Republicans on this for 40 years.
Let's move on to these propositions on tax increases in California. These were big. Matt, explain.
Yeah, as a native Californian, this fills my heart with sadness. But Jerry Brown pushed through Proposition 30, which is the biggest one, increasing taxes in order to help cover the budget deficit.
Only on rich people. You have to make over $250,000.
Here's the big picture on California. Between World War II and 2008, do you know how many years California had unemployment above 10%?
No.
Zero.
Okay.
Since 2008, we've had 2009, 2010, 2011, above 10%. It's above that kind of permanently now, based on the sort of blue state model of having public sector unions set their own prices, make their own pensions, and create these promises that taxpayers are forced to keep. And we're seeing the results in California, which is a disastrous economy.
And, you know, California used to be the bellwether state. Trends started there, you know, generally, beneficial trends, whether it was...
Used to be? It's not the rest of the states?
Well, what I was going to say is beneficial trends, you know, it'd be stuff like freshly prepared in-season vegetables at restaurants and things like that. California is now a bellwether for... It's a death knell, really, for what's going on in the United States. It has constantly refused to rein in its spending to a point where it is no longer attracting people. So we should watch California not for what is good that is coming next in America, but what to avoid, because they're killing themselves.
And it's also a significant that I think in the California legislature now we have a supermajority as of last night. So they don't need a Republican to do anything anymore. There's no veto power that Republicans have over what California. So we have a beautiful experiment, right? We have a model. Here's a control group. It's called California. If you want to see how this line of economic thinking works in practice, let's watch this state. And unfortunately, for those of us who love the state, it's going to be a car wreck, but it's also an interesting thought experiment.
And this vote for more taxes makes me wonder what happened to the Tea Party movement. And you two together wrote a book, Declaration of Independence, that independents were replacing Republicans and Democrats. I didn't see that this election.
Well, in fact, when you look at the exit polls and national data, independents were still a major player. You've got a third of voters who are Democrats, a third who are Republicans, and then the rest are independents. The fact is that independents stayed home below their percentage of the general population, partly because they were not being offered anything by the major
party
candidates.
They could have voted for Gary Johnson.
And many of them did. But we have not seen the candidates yet who are going to get independents to come out. Independents overwhelmingly are socially tolerant and fiscally responsible. And unfortunately, those types of major party candidates were in very short supply almost in every race.
Two other political issues, gay marriage. Three states said yes, first time it's been voted for.
And importantly, fourth state, Minnesota, said no to a anti-gay marriage amendment to their state constitution.
A law that would have banned gay
That's
marriage.
Right.
Right. But many states have legalized gay marriage, but it's always been done by a court. And,
and
34 states have voted on it before, and 32 states voted it down. Suddenly now, three states vote yes.
And it'll be interesting to see how Republicans react to this. If this is still, and remember, in 2004, Karl Rove made that election in part about opposing gay marriage. He is, you know, the Republican Party is reaping what it sowed on this. And David Bowes is right to point out there is a huge gap among young voters in particular between affiliation with the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, about 20 percentage points. That is, in my view, almost entirely on social issues like this.
Last point, and not a happy one for freedom, two states voted against political speech, free corporate political speech.
That's right.
Colorado and Montana, I thought they were libertarian.
They are, and this is, what they basically said is that they looked at Citizens United and said, oh, this allows too much dark money to come into politics.
Citizens United is the Supreme Court that decided.
Right.
Decision that allows corporations to spend money on elections.
So you can still, from a populist perspective, you can say, oh, there's too much money in politics. The way to do it is to keep people from speaking about it. The upside of these ballot initiatives at the state level is that they won't work. They won't be effective at all because the technological root arounds, like Matt was talking about with politics, is even stronger in terms of political speech. It's very difficult to keep people from speaking their mind in kind of larger and larger volume, which is a good thing.
And maybe the way Montana phrased it, corporations are not entitled to constitutional rights because they are not human beings.
That's right.
Most voters will say, yeah, they're not human beings.
Right.
But they are groups of people, and they should have a right to participate in politics.
People always forget that the Sierra Club is a corporation. The Reason Foundation is a corporation. Damn it.
On that note, thank you, Matt. And Nick, coming up, I'm excited that there are some passionate libertarians who were elected. Good news, finally. That's next. And now, the next president of the United States, Governor Gary Johnson. What? He didn't win? Governor Johnson, you didn't win? How many votes did you get?
You know, John, I got over a million votes, but I'm kind of disappointed. I didn't win number one, and I thought I would have gotten a lot more votes. I think people ended up taking to heart the fact that this was a two-person race and that every vote was going to count. Of course, I was trying to make the pitch that you make your vote count by voting for the person you most believe in, but it really didn't pan out. But we did get over a million votes and put a voice to issues that I think really needed a voice. You know, if I were to point at one factor, I think it was Romney losing the race, and it was losing the race because he wasn't conservative enough on dollars and cents. And I think the Republican social agenda turns off most Americans.
Well, you did get 1% of the vote, which is pretty good, and a higher vote total than any libertarian has before. But it does seem to be a two-party country. People think Republican or Democrat, and it's going to take some work to open brains.
Well, I think so. And then you talked in your earlier segment about initiatives that did pass, marriage equality, legalizing or regulating marijuana like alcohol in Colorado. I think that is going to change worldwide drug policy. Like I say, Coloradans get it, and they did it, and I applaud Colorado.
So you join us now from New Mexico. You've gone back to your home state. You're going to lick your wounds and go back to private life?
Well, by lick wounds, fitness is a big part of my life, so I hope to regain some ultra fitness here in the next month, and not that I'm not a fit guy right now, but I'm looking forward to that, and looking forward to continuing to be a spokesperson. I think the last thing anybody wants to think about or even contemplate is the next election cycle. I mean, I join everybody in putting my finger up my throat. I mean, we're sick of this. It's done with. Let's move forward. I think the country's in deep trouble, and it's from a financial standpoint. I think that unless we slash spending, we're going to find ourselves in a monetary collapse sooner than later.
And you joined the race because you didn't trust either candidate on that front. You said you never believed Obama would try to balance the budget as he said he would.
Well, I'm more liberal than Obama when it comes to civil liberties, and I'm a lot more conservative than Romney when it comes to dollars and cents. I think the majority of Americans fall in that category. And look, Republicans are horrible when it comes to civil liberties, and they're not so good on dollars and cents. Democrats, they're horrible on dollars and cents, and they're not so good on civil liberties. And like I say, I think the majority of Americans, as a member of the majority of Americans, we do care about these issues. Offering up a prediction, we're going to find ourselves with a heightened police state in this country. We're going to find ourselves continuing to militarily intervene in other countries' affairs, resulting in more enemies to this country than fewer. And the spending is unsustainable, and it's going to continue to be so.
On that bit of bad but probably true news, Gary, please stick around. Our audience wants to question you. And after that, some pockets of good news this election. We're back with Libertarian presidential candidate Gary Johnson. This show's special correspondent, Kennedy, who spent election night with President Obama and his fans, and a real expert on individual freedom, the Cato Institute's David Bowes. So questions from the audience. Who's first? Go for it.
Governor Johnson, I'm Zach Chambers from Orlando, Florida. And I was just curious of your future plans and if the 2016 election is in those future plans.
Well, I think that the last thing that people want to hear right now is anybody with future plans going to 2016. I mean, that's like sticking finger in your throat ready to throw up over just how sick we are of presidential politics at this moment. But staying involved, trying to provide a voice here for issues that I think are really important, and those issues are civil liberties, and those issues are spending, and those issues are the endless wars that we find ourselves in, creating more enemies to this country than fewer.
On the scale between fun and horribly grueling, what was the campaign like?
It was exactly that. It was fun to horribly grueling. Looking forward here to fun. Looking forward to fun.
Senator Johnson, I heard that yourself and Judge Gray filed a case according to the antitrust laws against the Republicans and Democrats for monopolizing the debates. Is this correct? And if so, what came of it?
We did file. It's still pending. We put emergency clauses on both lawsuits that we filed, and judges ruled that there was not an emergency, that I didn't have to be in the debates immediately, that they could wait until after the debates to hear these cases. So the cases still are pending.
Hope you win that one.
And by the way, good thing he had a judge on his side.
That's true. His vice president was a judge, is a judge, was a judge. Who's next? Yes.
Yeah, we've all heard the old adage, he who robs Peter to pay Paul can always count on Paul's support. Under Obama, 48% of people take from the Treasury, don't give back. What happens to America when we reach that tipping point of 50%?
Well, I think we know now that no presidential candidate wants to answer that question. But it is an issue. It's more complicated than simply saying 48%. Some of the 48% are people on Social Security and Medicare, and at least in their own minds, they paid for that. They're getting back what they paid.
They're getting back triple what
they paid. They may, but in their own minds, they're not freeloaders. They are, in fact, getting something they paid. But it absolutely is a problem if you get more and more people in a democracy thinking that a tax increase doesn't cost them any money and they can benefit from it. And we clearly have not found a solution to that problem. We need to do a better job with fiscal and economic education, but we've been working on that. There are a lot of experiments going on now with video and new media to convey messages like that, but it's complicated.
Yeah, I mean, the solution is rationality.
Well, okay, then we're doomed.
But there is this notion that we're a democracy. We're not a democracy. We're a constitutional republic, because in a democracy you can vote yourself a raise, and I think that's where we've gotten to in this country. I did have a third-party debate the other night with Jill Stein, and she closed her statements by saying there are 37 million students out there that if they'll just vote for me, they'll get free tuition.
Whoa.
That is no different than a junior high school promise.
But the good news was that Jill Stein is the Green Party candidate, and she had a lot of supporters, certainly around here, and yet Gary Johnson got twice as many votes as she got. Woo! So high five on that. All right, this doesn't really work with the screen. Who's next here? Yes.
I'd like to ask David, how do you assess the likelihood of the expanding numbers of incumbents in the Tea Party to help influence Republican policy and hopefully national policy in the direction of more liberty?
I hope that'll be the case. The point I've been making to the Tea Party for the past 3 years is you have to stay engaged after the election, because the spending interests and the rent seekers never stop paying attention to Congress. And citizens usually do. They get excited, they get some people elected, and then they go back to their lives.
Yes, go ahead.
So many of us who consider ourselves libertarians are disillusioned by politics, disgusted with the outcome. And so that leaves us kind of wondering, where do we go next? Where do we take this? Where can we make a difference now?
And Gary, let me give that to you and also add that we ask my Twitter followers, what does President Obama's reelection mean for liberty? Someone who calls himself at the Justice Department, I don't know if he is, says, we hope against reality, but his record shows we are screwed.
Well, what I hope it means for liberty-minded individuals is really this focus on being fiscally conservative and then moving away from this social agenda. So if you're going to identify yourself as a libertarian and be a part of the Republican movement, I mean, this is what did Romney in, I think, is the fact that he's got a social agenda that really scares most Americans, and that is anti-gay, anti-women's rights, anti-immigration. Look, that's not the future. I think that we are absolutely socially accepting of others' behavior as long as others' behavior doesn't do any harm to us, and yet this remains centrist within Republicans. So, like, I'm a little disheartened by the fact that there are so many people that identify themselves as libertarians but don't end up voting that way.
Well, I didn't think that Romney was anti-woman, but we're out of time. Thank you all. Coming up, I'll explain how to fix government. And one clue, we should fix it the way we fix a cat.